Sunday, February 20th. Weekends are sort of a safety valve in our lives, used to rest and recoup and have fun. The week had been a terrific strain, trying to assess the effect across the nation of the Vietnam debate. There had been increasing hostility in the columns for days and weeks, it seemed. And then, on Thursday and Friday, I had the feeling it was our inning, that we won with General Maxwell Taylor and Secretary Rusk. Nevertheless, I did not go to sleep Saturday night until 2:30. Finally went to my room and read and read and turned out the light at 2:30. The next morning, Lyndon asked me where we wanted to go to church. He makes quite a ritual of having me choose, and I always choose, his or mine in rotation, giving the edge to the Christian church if there's any uncertainty. But today, we went to St. Mark's. It is still a church in the round. But there were no surprises, as there so often are at St. Mark's, until, perhaps, one might say, when we started out, a little Coco MacPherson came up and took Lyndon's hand, bringing along her friend, Janice, a 10-year-old Negro member of the choir. We emerged from the church, four of us, hand in hand, Lyndon, Coco, Janice, and I. As we went down the sidewalk, we saw Helen Thomas. Lyndon said, "Helen, you know Coco MacPherson. Coco, if you don't watch out, she'll be announcing your wedding." And at the car, he said, "How would you all like to ride over to the White House with us and see the dogs?" They would. The four of us piled in. We had just asked Bill Baxter and his wife, and Harry and Clayton, if they'd like to come for lunch, and they were going to follow us. But the four of us rode off, with all the cameras clicking. At the White House, we took the two little girls over to Lyndon's office, and he gave them pencils and keepsakes, and then we found the dogs and went upstairs, and the dogs tumbled all over them. Lyndon is very easy in conversation with anybody from Janice to a chief of state when he wants to be. We found out in a brief span of two or three questions that there were 11 in Janice's family, 7 boys and 4 girls. 2, the oldest boys, were in the military. She did not have a father. We asked no further questions. And she'd started going to St. Mark's because she was a friend of Coco's. The 8 of us sat down to lunch, and if anybody besides me thought that it was an interesting facet of Lyndon Johnson, Janice Diggs came to a small private party. Full cabinet member Robert Weaver did. It didn't show. Children had an hilariously good time. Courtney said, "This is the best time I've ever had in my life." It was all Lyndon's doing. I felt the glow. We watched Mac George Bundy on television. He was precise, razor sharp. In the light of Senator Kennedy's espousal of the Viet Cong being included in a sort of coalition government before and not as the result of an election, Mac George Bundy's quotes from President Kennedy about similar situations in communist-infiltrated countries was particularly acute and incisive. Lyndon said, "I'd give him A double plus." We called up on the way to church to ask if he and Mary and Clark and Marnie and Mary Margaret would have dinner with us. And so with that pleasant prospect to look forward to, I lay down for a luxurious nap. Purposely, I refrained from calling Linda. She'd arrived in New Orleans Friday night to meet George, being chaperoned by Lindy Boggs, who is playing the part of a very giving family friend to my children. Lindy has outlined to me the parades and balls, dinner in the old French Quarter, the plantation of friends in Slidell, so many fascinating things that in a way I don't want to interrupt Linda's independence or her time, or seem like a hovering and concerned mother. I balance between trying to remember that next month she will be 22 with a right to independence, and that her father is President of the United States, and that anything she does may reflect on him. We'd ask everybody early, deliberately aiming for an early bedtime. Mac George and Mary came at 6, and the Clark Cliffords soon, and Mary Margaret was already there with her adorable child, who affords Lyndon more pleasure now by being totally unrelated with any of the troubles of his life, totally happy and totally concentrated on him. She and the puppies are two pleasant safety valves. He called Trudy and Joe Fowler. Joe had been to the Carol Channing party, and there was an hilarious picture of him doing a dance called the monkey, I believe. Carol, who wore white ski pants, he had cast a look at the people at his table as he arose to dance and said, Do you think this will shake the dollar? Perhaps paying off that night of gaiety, Joe was deep at work in a pile of papers, but he agreed to quit and come over and have dinner with us. It was a pleasant party of nine. I moved from Clark, talking about the library, to Mac, talking about how sad I was that he was leaving, how grateful I am for what he's done. And I told him that I hoped he would add any names he could to the list of possible directors for the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Service, and that someday he himself would come to lecture there, for a summer, for a night, anything. I also said, I hope that you're going to leave the papers that relate to the part of your time here with us for the library. I was quite prepared to hear that he was not. To my great delight, he laughed and said, everything that I've got is going to stay right here, except my bills. Lyndon talked about Vietnam. In fact, that is about two-thirds of what we talk about these days. He talked about the individual feelings of every mother who had a son in Vietnam, and in comparison about his feelings. He said, there's not a mother in the world who cares as much about it as I do, because I have 200,000 of them over there, and they think I am in charge. And if I am not, God help them. Who the hell is? In discussing General Westmoreland, whom he admires enormously, and his opinion on the pause, the General's feelings sounded about like this. I do not expect anything to come of it. I am not for it. I do not want to be recorded as a boob. But we can afford it. The weather is going to be so bad for the next few weeks that we could not do much bombing anyway. If we're ever going to have a pause, now is the time to do it. For our own Christmas season and a similar holiday for the Vietnamese people. And the planes can be well used along some routes in Laos. So, if you must have a pause, do it. But we would not give you this advice unless we thought you had guts enough to resume the bombing. Mac George, who has a light word for the heaviest matters, his few hours off time, said, the president is not a lover of pauses this week. We buy and sell pauses on the curb. He bought this one because a lot of people were standing in front of him holding the pen, and people of such strength and repute they were. It was a delightful evening. Willis Hurst arrived as we were finishing dinner. I'd ask him to be our house guest. And then I took Mary Bundy and Trudy Fowler downstairs to show them where we had hung the Eleanor Roosevelt portrait. Trudy has already been to make a speech, a beautification, to Syracuse, New York. She was a great hit. She loved it, and I think she'll do lots more. We went to the theater and saw a few of my home movies. There's a streak of egotism ineradicable in all of us. I hoped they would cheer when I thought the scenes were beautiful. They didn't. And then we saw The Land We Love, a very exquisite, professionally done movie about See America First, put out by the Treasury Department, I believe, in the interest of tourism. And I can't wait to get in my car and head for New England or Wyoming. So alluring it was. And then The President's Country by USIA. I'm afraid the NBC one, by real preference, will never see the light of day. We all went over to the president's office to view Jimmaloo's bust of Lyndon, which so recently we had all applauded the skies, and it got very mixed reviews. Not the strength, not the vitality, said Mac George. I still like it, and 7 years is all the time we'll ever have to give to it. I had showed them the slide of the portrait that Ellen Barry had done of me. As always, opinions were mixed, but nearly everybody liked the impressionistic approach, the colors, the background, and nobody likes the mouth or the chin. Our guests left early, about 11, and I had that happy feeling that these are all people I want to continue to be a part of my life. Back said there was a room in his apartment labeled for Linda Bird. I hope that each of them will someday come to Austin to lecture on what they have seen through the window on which they looked at government, Washington, presidents, and the years of their time here. It was a good day.